On this edition of Our Town, I get the pleasure of speaking with Jason Hawkins, the CAO at Peace Harbor Hospital, Dr. Willie Foster, who is the head of the emergency department, and Robert Dumig, who is with the Oregon Office of Rural Health. And they're joining me with me today. I want to start out with, now, obviously, from us here at a local standpoint, we have seen what rural healthcare is like. And rural America is at a critical point in healthcare, and communities all over the country suffering from lack of medical care professionals, rising costs, rising poverty levels. Florence is not immune to the difficulties that other communities face. However, on average, Florence is doing better than a lot of other rural communities in our state. We also know that during the previous year, there was a crisis with the pharmaceutical end, with limited number of pharmacists and the permanent closing of Bi-Mart's pharmacy and the temporary closing of the Rite Aid pharmacy. All this figures into how Florence is maneuvering through the healthcare crisis. Of course, this is nothing new. Healthcare issues have been ongoing across the world and exacerbated by the recent pandemic. Robert Dumig, tell me a little bit about the inception of your office. You were talking to me before we went on the air about how this all came to be. Give me a little bit of background and history.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Office of Rural Health was created back in the late 70s, and it was created by the Oregon Legislature. We are a statutory office. Back in the 80s, we moved up to OHSU, which is our home base and where we operate out of. And there's also now a Federal Office of Rural Health Policy, State Office of Rural Health Program that helps do some of the support for our office. We work with critical access hospitals across the state. We work with the Certified Rural Health Clinics, and we do all types of technical assistance with them, from quality measures to operational measures. We help certify the rural health clinics, help plan those, and help them go through that process. We offer conferences, educational series, and we also have a workforce team. So we have a full-time recruiter that works with rural facilities, and we have a team that operates provider incentives. So it's tax credits, loan repayment, loan forgiveness, medical malpractice, reinsurance programs. So kind of across the board.
And apparently you give some money to doctors too, every now and then, from what I heard before we went on the air.
Yeah, we can. We are the ones that administer the provider tax credit. So if you're a qualified rural provider, you can get up to $5,000 tax credit. We do the loan repayment programs for both the state and a federal program. So if you qualify as a provider that's working in a rural community, we can pay a large portion of your loans back. And then we have a loan forgiveness program, or actually two of them, where we pay up front for the students to go through their educational programming, and they owe us a service obligation on the backside.
Very nice, very nice. Now, one of the things that your office is big on is collecting data and information about rural hospitals and other aspects of the hospital care. How has COVID impacted the ability to collect data over the last couple of years? Has it changed? Are there inaccuracies, or how is that working now with that pandemic being looming there in the background?
Yeah, I think the last couple of years is going to throw the data off quite a bit. We were you're able to just show patterns, et cetera, over the course of years. The last 2 years have thrown everything so much out of whack, from, you know, the patient populations to mortality rates to workforce rates, that it's going to take us a while to balance that out and see what was just COVID and then what is going to be kind of a permanent outcome to what's going on.
So the most current data that we have available, which is some of the stuff I've got here, is sort of a mix between pre-COVID and COVID?
Yeah, absolutely. I think some of the communities, and I think you're looking at our Area of Unmet Healthcare Need report that we do every year. That report, again, we do it every year. It's a legislative requirement. It helps communities understand where they stand. It helps the state determine which of the smaller hospitals are going to be getting cost-based reimbursement for Medicaid. We also use it to score individuals who are applying for loan repayment, as to, you know, if you were going to a community that is more in need, you get a higher score when it comes to being awarded. So I think that's going to change year to year, and I don't know that this report is going to have as big an impact or show as big an impact from the COVID at this point, but probably next year.
Now, one of the issues we have being a rural area is not indicative of many other areas that is not a healthcare issue, is a housing issue. We talked about that before, Jason. We've talked about being able to keep healthcare professionals and some of the difficulties with housing. We've talked about solutions in the past. Where are we now as far as it? Because I know that that plays into, you know, being having good healthcare.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, George. The a couple things we're working on as a system and as a network are strategies throughout Peace Health. Namely, there's some interim strategies. So we have a housing hotline now. When the new hire comes on board, the talent acquisition folks are able to provide that information to them. Our managers are acting as ambassadors for Florence, making sure that those new hires land here effectively. We do have rolled out some what we call kind of rental guarantee arrangements with some landlords here in town so that they can preserve some of those properties for our caregivers coming into play. So we're looking at some RV sites as well as some, landlords to have some apartment complexes for us. We're also looking long term, you know, in terms of like where is our exact space, you know, on a permanent basis for housing. But as you know, there's also some other developments happening here in town, north of town, up by Fred Meyer. So keeping an eye on that and watching that market.
Is one of the difficulties, I guess one of the difficulties is how doctors and nurses that kind of transition in and out of the area. Is there any, you know, silver bullet to keeping folks here long term? Or is that just kind of the cost of being a hospital in a rural community?
Yeah, I think every community, well, first of all, there's an overall shortage across the country. So there's a shortage. And then, you know, what differentiates somebody that wants to work, say, in Portland or Philadelphia versus Florence? And we want to target and attract those people that want to be in a community hospital to start. We don't, and if you want to be in urban, I've lived a life where you try to recruit urban people to rural areas, and it doesn't always work, you know. So we want to be open and honest about the opportunity here when we're recruiting, exactly what they're getting into. We want to be competitive with wages and benefits, of course. We think we offer a good work-life balance. Florence is a great community to recruit. I've seen rural communities that have kind of a stagnant economy, and this is anything but stagnant here in Florence. It's a great, great place to live and very healthy and very, very affectionate community for that matter, and very inclusive, very open to outsiders, which is really important for people to see. And ultimately, you know, creating joy at work. That's pretty hard these days, but that's really what we want to be trying to do. You know, and how do you do that? You know, that's helping people feel like they belong to something. They want to take care of their community. Making sure we wrap them around with really good technology. Peace Health does a great job making sure we have the latest lab analyzers.
Hey, don't steal my next question coming up.
All right, we'll stop there then. All right, we'll leave it at that.
I do have one for you, but do you want to add to that?
Well, I was going to say, when it comes to, you know, providers, whether this is a provider or, you know, a nurse or an MA or a lab tech, you know, what can be attractive to one person cannot be attractive to another. Take, for example, the schools. Some providers love the schools here. They're small. It's easy to get involved. Other providers say, hey, there's not this program. Right. And ultimately, that can be a reason for them to look elsewhere. So, I mean, what can be good for one provider might not be what's ideal for another provider.
What's interesting is that, you know, during our monthly program, Doc Talk, that we do with Peace Harbor, what I normally do is if I haven't interviewed the person before, I talk to them at the beginning and ask them a little bit about themselves. And I find that through the recruitment process, I like to hike, I like to kayak, I like to fish. I'm hearing a lot of that over and over again. So obviously, the recruiting aspect is in play, and they know who they want to get in the area. So,
and I would add just one thing: it really is important for the community to recruit these providers, not just Peace Health, because they're going to work at Peace Health, but they're going to live in the community. So, if you don't have the other people in the community as part of that process, it's going to be harder to recruit and retain them.
And that's why Jason says, you know, it's a very inclusive community. Mm-hmm. We do like outsiders. You know, more that where they're not from California, but no, I'm kidding. That's a joke. Dr. Foster, what type of issues have affected how the emergency room operates or overall hospital in general when it comes to providing care in a rural setting?
Well, that's can be a challenge because we don't have the specialists right at our fingertips. Many or most providers, when they train, they tend to train in, you know, larger institutions where you have lots of specialists right at your fingertips. You know, most emergency medicine residency programs are in large city hospitals, you know, and the cardiologist is just upstairs. The ENT specialist or resident is just upstairs and can come down. So it can be a challenge coming out here where you have those specialists, but they're remote. You got to talk to them, you know, 50, 60 miles away or even farther.
But Peace Health has done Peace Health and Peace Harbor have done a good job about like providing a cardiologist several days a week here locally for people to go to, so they don't necessarily have to go. I mean, maybe some specialized tests, angioplasty or something, they may have to go to a urban hospital. But they do provide a lot of that.
Yes. Compared to many rural hospitals, we do have a strong, you know, specialist group that comes here on a regular basis. And that makes us in many ways kind of, I don't want to brag, but kind of at the top end of rural hospitals in terms of the kind of support we have from Peace Health, you know, over in Eugene and system-wide and stuff. You know, we're not way isolated out there and, you know, kind of on our own. Being part of a system gives us many strengths and benefits to our patients.
And then that kind of goes back, as you stepped on what you stepped on. I was going to, that's what's coming next. Jason, while it's difficult for many rural hospitals to be equipped with the latest technology and most up-to-date equipment, Peace Harbor, as part of the larger Peace Health network, has had an advantage to other rural hospitals, and I think that's what you were going to get at earlier. How has that support made care here on the coast better?
Oh, yeah. I've been kind of in the critical access small community hospitals now for about 20-some years, and there are, you know, independent rural hospitals and hospitals part of small systems and hospitals part of larger systems like we are, and It's a much better environment to be part of a system these days. There was always a debate, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, you know, about losing your identity at the local level. But we've been able to maintain that identity, and I think we've been able to demonstrate we're offering more services by being part of a system. We continue to add technology, whether it's imaging equipment, cardiology equipment, which attracts technologists that want to work in the latest and greatest technology, attracts providers who want to make sure that the results we're getting are contemporary. Being part of a system helps stabilize you and insulates from the financial hardships that we're all experiencing right now. Where if you're an independent small community hospital, that's got to be very devastating where your cash flow probably is right now.
Let's talk a little bit about the data itself, Robert, that's been collected. Your reports have broken down the data into three categories: urban, rural, and frontier. I think urban is kind of self-explanatory, big city kind of stuff. But rural and frontier can change from area to area. Can you kind of explain the breakdown in rural and frontier?
Yeah, the definition of rural, depending whether you're using a state program or a federal program, can vary. There are a lot of different definitions at the federal level for rural. Our office defines rural as a community of 40,000 or fewer, 10 miles or more from another community of 40,000 or fewer. Our state is very diverse when it comes to our geography. And so rural on the west side of the mountains and in the valley and along the coast is very different than rural on the east side. So our definition tries to capture all of that. And we really work to make sure that we're using one consistent definition so it's easier for people who are working with or applying for some of the programs that we offer. Frontier, we use basically a federal definition, which is six or fewer people per square mile. And so we have 10 states in Oregon that qualify as frontier. And they just run into a lot more of that distance problem, right? To get to any kind of care that's out there, they're going to have to go a lot farther. And so they hit a few more challenges than some of our other rural communities that are a little bit closer.
Well, I want to pretend I understand everything, and I know I don't. But from the east side of the mountains, the west side of the mountains, coastal basically, to the high desert there, I'm guessing that coastal, we got a lot of smaller communities because it's coastal, and we have a lot of tourism, a lot of people that move to that area because of that. Eastern side, places like Bend, that gets smaller and smaller and farther between, few and farther between. Is that
right? Right, absolutely. And they're much farther apart. Bend obviously doesn't qualify as rural.
Right. But that's the biggest thing I think of when I
yeah, exactly,
sisters or
exactly,
something.
Absolutely. And so all the towns are much farther apart. And there are fewer of them. And so you've got that distance. But then on the coast, we have the challenges of even between here and Newport, right? Sometimes that road washes out. Even between Newport and Lincoln City, that road washes out. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's less the distance and more the mountainous terrain or the type of terrain that we're dealing with. So,
do you deal with basically collecting and sharing the data, or do you deal with trying to also determine solutions to the crisis?
Well, we do both. We believe that using this data helps our rural communities understand what the challenges are and helps them come up with the solutions. We certainly can't go out and tell them what the solutions are, right? But we want to offer that. That data, and then along with some of the grants that we have through the federal government, the Medicare Flexibility Grant and our SHIP grants, et cetera, is getting resources to facilities to help them find those solutions.
I didn't look through all the data because there's quite a bit of it here, but I'm curious, is there like a number based on federal regulations or state regulations that, you know, I'd like to have X amount of doctors per X amount of people? I'm sure there's some kind of information out there, or do you not get into that necessarily?
Yeah, you know, that's a bit of a challenge. This report tries to determine and does actually rate some of the communities based on access to those providers. How long does it take to get in? What is the distance it has to be driven? And so we judge those against what we have going on in in Oregon. And the goal is to improve those as best we can. But again, how Florence might deal with that and address it versus Baker City is going to be very different. So there is no real set data from the feds that say you need to have this many or that many. And again, our providers are changing. It used to be everybody wanted a doctor, right? And now we have a doctor and nurse practitioners and PAs. And the goal, I think, now is to make sure we're getting our providers to operate at the top of their license. So if we have PAs and MPs operating on the top of their license, then we may not need as many physicians in a particular community that we did before.
Well, and I think the expertise is in some ways becoming more broad. I have a friend who's a urologist. He's surgical, you know, but yet he claims that he claims he's very well versed in general medicine. In general, I mean, because he sees people for all sorts of different things, although his specialty is in that. So I think that's kind of is that kind of indicative? Maybe Dr. Foster, you can talk on that. Is that kind of indicative of where, you know, the medical field is going? I mean, people that are specialized are also educating themselves to be more generally available for other folks.
I mean, over the years, medicine has become more specialized, and it's continuing to become more, you know, specialized. And it can be difficult to keep up with everything. And, you know, based on, you know, most physicians' personality, we like to be the expert, you know, and you can't be the expert at everything. And so that's part of what drives specialization as well, plus just the big increase in knowledge and stuff. So, it can be difficult wanting to really address all your patients' needs, but not being able to really keep all that knowledge and expertise up to date. So we're seeing an increased amount of specialization, and that can be a challenge.
Sort of a switch in thought here. As you know, the pandemic hit, fewer and fewer, you know, primary care physicians being available out there. Have we seen a transition from people going to the clinic to maybe coming to the emergency room more often than, say, when maybe they used to go to the clinic for something that they now go to the emergency room for?
I don't think overall. I mean, certainly when we have not had as many providers in the clinic as we would like, sometimes that impacts the number coming to the ED just because they can't get an appointment. But I think it's due more to that rather than a shift in, oh, I want to be seen at the emergency room. They would prefer to go to the clinic, have an appointment, go at a certain time and stuff. But sometimes just due to staffing levels and lack of primary care, people say, well, I can't get in. I guess I'll go to the emergency department or the walk-in clinic.
Now, we spoke a little bit about staffing issues a little bit ago. And then, Jason, you mentioned the fact that, you know, you want to make it a good experience for people that work here. What kind of things is the hospital doing, you know, now that maybe they don't have as many people available in the workforce to kind of make that a better environment? I mean, what kind of things have you added over the last few years?
Well, you do a lot of things, and you have to kind of have your eyes wide open as to what is actually happening and what are people's needs and wants. And, you know, as I said earlier, you know, competitive wages and benefits are that, but everybody's trying to do that, right? And,
yeah, that to me, I mean, I love money as much as expert. To me, that doesn't spell fun, though.
No.
It's what I do with the money that spells fun.
Exactly. Now, I think going back to that comment about, you know, trying to create some joy in the job, Florence is a great place. 5 minutes after work, you're on vacation. It's a wonderful place to live. So that's a big piece. And, you know, what we do at work, we try to do appreciation events. You know, those are always a big deal. We want to make sure that people feel like they belong, like they're making a difference. That's why they got into it, right? That's why they became a nurse or a doctor or a technician or a technologist. And making sure that they feel good about their craft that they went to school for and they're able to do that and listen to what things make things better. You know, what can you do better to take care of the patients and let them contribute to those kind of solutions? Let them sense that they're part of those kind of things. And that's hard to do in a highly regulated environment that healthcare is, but there are windows to do those kind of things. You know, making contributions that way, making sure we have state-of-the-art technology, as I said. Nothing's worse than going to school as an image technologist and then coming to a rural facility and you're maybe two or three generations behind in a CT scanner. So having spent the last couple of years $5 to $6 million in radiology equipment and upgrading our ORs and ER with them from the community that did those contributions, those things make a world of difference and people feeling like I can make a difference in my job.
And let me tell you, as a patient, makes you feel a lot better, too, yeah. I will have to say on that. Obviously, you know, that's one of the difficult things is the amount of stress that, you know, that is out there. Because the field, I mean, you know, doctors and nurses and practitioners are taking care of people's lives. I mean, you know, so it's a very important part to make sure they're not stressed out, you know, to a level like that. In talking about that and in the amount of people that, you know, are available for that, what sort of things in the future can we look forward to kind of help alleviate the patient per doctor discrepancy there?
There's different strategies. I think in rural medicine, telehealth needs to continue to evolve. I think having the opportunity, we were just talking about it on the way over with Dr. Foster and I, and how do we create more access? Because if we're creating access, we're decompressing some of the stress and the need to be seen. If we create more access with telehealth and primary care, it decompresses maybe the need to come into the ER for those kind of things. If we're able to create more of a tele-intensivist, it supports our ICU and our ICU nurses and our hospitalists. So I think having those services available, having that technology in rural areas. I mean, I can remember when I first started, we didn't even have teleradiology. You know, right now when we do an image, we push that image over to Eugene and they're read instantly. We used to have a radiologist on site back in the day. And on Saturdays and Sundays, someone had to put all the film in a jacket and drive it an hour and a half to be read. Yeah. You know, how are you getting real-time images as an ER physician? Those are real big job satisfiers for us. So.
Well, and we have advanced in medicine because of the pandemic. We've advanced in how we interact with patients because of the pandemic. So if there's anything good to come out of that, you know, that could be one of the things that telehealth, you know, getting the advance it is. Is this something that may be incorporated, Robert, into future reports that might come out on how that also helps rural areas to maybe cope with some of the things they don't have?
Oh, yeah, I absolutely think so. And to your point, Jason, telehealth has been huge for rural. And I think a challenge for us now across the state is broadband. And there's a lot of federal money coming down the road this fall. They're in the process of rulemaking. But we're talking that Oregon can get tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, to do some broadband expansion. So it's making sure that from a healthcare perspective, we are at the table having that conversation and making sure that people understand broadband is hugely, hugely important. I think one thing about all of the workforce challenges we're having is this isn't going to be a quick solution. We were challenged before. We're going to have to step back and look at how we're educating the students and what we're doing to, from a rural perspective, what we're doing to make sure that rural high school students are involved in healthcare right while they're in middle school and high school and understand they can do these jobs, that it is a career ladder for them. Here are some of the steps they can take. The area health education centers are really big on working with students in the rural communities on that. The other is getting our students, medical students, out on their third year rotations and into rural facilities because they still have a residency to go through. But if I go out and come down here to Florence and I get to know Dr. Foster and we build a relationship during that time, I go off to my residency and he still emails me and tells me what's going on in Florence. And then I go off to my residency. My first, second year, it may be that Jason wants to offer me a contract right early, and they've got me tied in, so I'm not going to stay where I'm doing my residency. So it really is. And on a nursing piece, we don't have a shortage of nursing students. I used to sit on the board of Clatsop Community College. We always had plenty of nursing students. We don't have faculty. So we need to go back and bring in other systems in this, in the education system, to say, what are we going to do? What are we going to change to make sure that the faculty are there to make sure that we have the number of providers and that we're going to need?
Jason, you want to comment on
Yeah, just on a local level, we just have launched the CNA program again with partnership with Soyuza High School as well as Lane Community College and Peace Health. So we're actually starting to create that program again and get that started again. So the idea is that a high schooler could be graduating with not only a CNA-1 certification but a CNA-2, and they could start right away with a job with us. So and that's, making somewhere, $17 an hour right out of high school. So, and then they can decide, maybe I want to be an RN and take advantage of some of our tuition reimbursement programs. So education and getting the school's faculty is a big deal. You're right. Yeah. And getting those programs back together again is really important. Offering scholarships, having our foundation be a little more involved in supporting those kiddos and what we're doing.
If there's something you could say, Robert, to kind of sum up the work that you're doing, because I don't have a full grasp of everything. I tried to look through this and see, but I want to make sure I don't miss anything. Some important aspect of this work that we didn't touch on. Can you think of?
Wow. From our office's perspective, what we really want to do is be able to get as much useful information to our rural facilities, whether it's a hospital or a clinic or a rural EMS that we also work with, so that they understand what the facts are on the ground, so that they can work toward making changes, and to be there to help give them support where we can. Sometimes that's grant money. Sometimes that's trying to bring in some consultants that may be able to help. Sometimes that's just getting everybody in a room to have a conversation, but whatever it is, and that the conversations that go around this are really, really important, right? Because we don't all know the answers, and we all have our own challenges in our own facilities, whether it's our provider levels, whether it's our payer mix, whether it's our governance structure, whatever it is. There's these kind of challenges, but the resources are out there, and we just need to keep looking for them.
I would say that, like I said, I've been in rural healthcare since about the mid-90s. And much of that time in Pennsylvania, but much like Robert here in Oregon, Pennsylvania's State Office of Rural Health and the Federal Office of Rural Health were instrumental in helping me as an administrator understanding what programs are available out there, whether it's critical access programs, 340B, grant funding, things like that. It's oftentimes it's a lot of having to dig through all the federal rules and having an office to go to who's a one voice and being able to say, hey, these programs, here's your menu of services that may be an option for you that's available, is fantastic to have it at your fingertips as an organization, because you boil it all down as what's important for me. Urban's great, but that's not where I'm at. I'm in the rural space. Right. And having their office is just a godsend for us.
Dr. Foster, one last thing for you. I'd like to have Diana Pimlott here, but I know that you're probably as well versus what's going on right now as can be. What's the pharmaceutical situation now? I know that Rite Aid's back on board, Fred Meyer, Safeway, Florence Pharmacy. Are we doing better now, or is the hospital having problems getting people their medications and things like that?
Compared to some of the problems we had a few months ago, things are, much better with the pharmacies back online. There's medication now that's in good supply for treating COVID to reduce the risk of progression to severe disease. And for a while there was a lack of that, but several pharmacies in town have that now. And we do have it at the hospital as well. So the situation is a lot better. There's going to be ongoing issues because pharmacists, just like providers and nurses, are
getting stressed.
Getting stressed. And so they're. Yeah.
Well, I noticed that, going to Fred Meyer, there's has not been a line of 15 to 20 people standing there lately. In fact, I went the other day, was first in line. So it's like, You know, so you can see some of that easing off now. So that's a good thing.
And we are we were just talking about on the way over the take home packs in the ER. Some that helps out a little bit too with some patients coming in.
Is that like samples?
Not
kind
quite.
Of, not really.
It's when the pharmacy isn't open, so we can give patients medicines to get them until the when the pharmacy is open.
Right. Yeah. And the medical group and the physician offices are also looking at some strategies around some sort of generic distribution as well when they leave the doctor's office too. So we're realizing this is not even unique to Florence. It's a rural issue out there too.
Yeah. I did want to say one other thing. Stupid me. I've been doing all this psychology study lately because working on this program that I'm doing, and it talks about giving kudos to people when they deserve it and not over giving kudos because it kind of takes away from that. One thing about that Peace Health does, and I'm just giving you the kudos here, is that they find the time to recognize those that are important. And they even ask the patients, and I'm sure this is not just something that Florence does or Peace Health does, but they ask the patients to recognize the people that have given them service. I think that's a great thing. So.
Yeah, it's really fantastic. We have a couple programs, Guardian Angel, where a patient can nominate somebody, and there's not a better moment when someone gets their wings in a department and when they read a really nice story being recognized by a patient or their family in a time of need. Sometimes it actually comes from their family and their loved ones and how they took care of mom or dad. Mm-hmm. And to be able to share that at a huddle, at a department meeting, or across campuses. You talk about uplifting and feeling getting joy in your job. There's nothing better than getting a note from a patient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Robert Dumig is from the Oregon Office of Rural Health. Came down to visit with us from Astoria today. Thank you for making the trip. Appreciate that.
Glad to be
Dr.
Here.
Willie Foster with the Emergency Department at Peace Harbor Hospital and Jason Hawkins, CAO over there. Thank you all for being here today. A lot of good information and keep on keeping on, right?
All right. Well, thank you, George.
Thanks.
You. Appreciate it.
Coming up next on the June edition of Our Town, we will talk with Mike Miller from Public Works.